Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, just 1 week into Ramadan, Islam's most holy month, and in the name of Allah, more death and more destruction strikes London Bridge, waged by Islamic jihadists. According to Prime Minister May, the United Kingdom will remain in the severe alert stage. Now, in response to what happened there, President Trump then made the following short statement. I want to play for that for you right now. Russ?
America sends our thoughts, our prayers, and our deepest sympathies to the victims of this evil slaughter, and we renew our resolve, stronger than ever before, to protect the United States and its allies from a vile enemy that has waged war on innocent life, and it's gone on too long. This bloodshed must end. This bloodshed will end. As president, I will do what is necessary to prevent this threat from spreading to our shores and work every single day to protect the safety and security of our country, our communities, and our people. Thank you.
We are listening to Stand in the Gap Today, this first Monday of June. I'm Sam Rohr, and I'm going to be joined today by co-host Isaac Crockett. And today on this special program, we're going to focus on two major themes. Let me tell you where we're going to go, ladies and gentlemen. Segment one and two, we're going to consider this theme, terrorism on London Bridge and lessons for the United States. Our special guest, John Guandolo, president and founder of UnderstandingTheThreat.com and former FBI agent. He's also author of the FBI's training manual on Islamic awareness of what's happening here in the country. He will be with us here in just a few seconds. In segments three and four, then, we're going to go live. We're going to go live to Jerusalem with White House correspondent Bill Koenig. Bill will be calling in direct from Jerusalem. He's going to update us on a few of his insights as he did travel closely and as a part of the entourage with President Trump in his recent Mideast tour. We're also going to get his view on the split that's occurring right now between Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, where Iran is accusing President Trump of pulling strings and creating division within the Islamic world. So text and email your friend right now to join us on Standing in the Gap Today. So every part of today's program is going to be information. You're not going to hear anyone else, and it's vital to understand these things. Now, let me set this up right, and I'm going to invite in, first of all, our first guest. As I said, former FBI agent. He's the author of the FBI's training manual on Islamic activities in the United States. He's also the founder and the president of Understanding the Threat, and you can find that by going to UTT.org. And with that, John Guandolo, thanks for being with us today on this important program.
Thanks for having me. And just a quick correction, it's UnderstandingTheThreat.com is our website.
Understanding. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you got it. Spell out the whole thing. UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Thank you, John.
Well, John,
you're very welcome, and we have a lot to go over here. You are the expert on these themes. I want to go directly here. The weekend terrorist actions in the United Kingdom, the world is watching that. People were murdered when a van crashed into a crowd. We've seen that tactic before. But then there were people also who had their throats slashed in a restaurant by other Islamic attackers, and the world is watching. My first question to you is this. Does it surprise you that this attack has come in such quick succession right after, I mean, literally just a couple of weeks after the Manchester attack there in the UK?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I know you know this because you follow our work. We've been predicting a significant increase in Europe in general, in the UK specifically, of these kinds of attacks, because the British government and its law enforcement continues to demonstrate weakness and cowardice. And what I think, I mean, it appears to me the prime minister is literally clinically insane, because the response is so perplexing over and over again, denying this has anything to do with Islam. And now, with these recent attacks on the London Bridge, she's blaming internet companies for not doing more. I mean, it is so disconnected from reality. So, no, this is not surprising at all.
John, we just heard from President Trump, the President of the United States, you know, in his support of defending ourselves and our allies. He talked about this bloodshed that must stop and that will be put an end to. It will stop. And he said, as president, I will do what is necessary to prevent this threat from spreading to our shores and work every single day to protect the safety and security of our country, our communities, and our people. Kind of a double question here, but were you encouraged by what the president said, and do you believe that he knows what the threat really is? Is he fully aware of how much the threat of something like this happening is already embedded within the fabric of American society through the secretive work of some of these Muslim groups?
Great question. I would say, first of all, talk is cheap. If he wants to do that, then he should stop waiting for the courts and these unconstitutional judges to do whatever it is he's waiting for them to do. He's the president of the United States. He has constitutional authority to shut down our borders, and so he should do that. It's critical. I mean, absolutely critical. The other part of your question is, I think at a gut level he understands the threat. I do not believe he understands how bad it is right now.
Well, that's a good setup for my next question here then, John, to you. The president did attack the mayor of London, who told the people after this that they didn't need to worry about Islamic terrorism, when in fact the president's saying they ought to be concerned about it. Now, if London and the UK should be concerned, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most critical and 1 being the least, how concerned should Americans be about Islamic terrorist attack here in America?
Well, let me, before I give you a number, I want to say that we're still very focused on these attacks. I mean, there's just a video out now this morning from an individual Muslim going into in Spain, going into a Catholic church during a wedding, screaming Allahu Akbar, and right up there against the altar. And so I think a physical attack, we're probably about at an 8, but the real attack of the fabric of the country and them winning the war, it's a 10.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it. The level is severe. There's a lot we're going to uncover here in the next segment. So I want you to stay with us. Our special guest, John Guandalo, president and founder of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. We're going to move into the next segment to Islamic terrorism on the London Bridge, lessons for the United States. Where are we in the United States? How close are we to something happening like that here in the United States? Stay with us. We're going to cover this issue when we come back.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr.
Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, the general theme for today's program is From London Bridge to the Western Wall. And in this first segment, we are talking about the impact now of the terrorist action in the UK on London Bridge. Our special guest, John Guandolo, he's the founder and president of Understanding the Threat, former FBI agent and author of the FBI training manual on Islam. We're going to conclude and go into right now the applications of what we, in fact, should learn from the UK. But I want you to stay tuned because at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be taking a call directly from Jerusalem with White House correspondent Bill Koenig, who's going to be calling in and updating us on some things that are happening there in Jerusalem as we speak. So let me go ahead here, John, as we continue on this. Europe and America, there seems to be, and you touched on it last time, there seems to be a grave sense of denial regarding the deep-set and entrenched Islamic terrorism threat to the safety of our respective nations. We've said it before, you've said it. Until we know the enemy, we're going to fall victim before the enemy. And in the UK, in London now specifically, there are entire sections there of the city where the laws and the culture of Islam prevails. Sharia is imposed, and there are no-go centers where the police refuse to go. And clearly, there are beachheads of activity that are going. You're talking about that Prime Minister May must be insane because she is not even recognizing that. We have the same problem here in the U.S. We've talked about it a lot. But with that, we need to answer some questions here. And I want to go to you right off, John Guandolo, president and founder of UnderstandingTheThreat.org. Let me ask you this question, and you go where you want to go with it. What is the primary lesson that we in the United States, whether they are politicians, whether they are in office, whether they are in law enforcement, what's the primary lesson that we should be learning from what is taking place in the UK again now?
That we are in a real war against Islam, which has declared a war against the West in order to impose Sharia and establish an Islamic state. How about that for starters? Islam has never been unclear about their intentions. They put out videos. They say it in their mosques. When we look at what happened in Europe, and specifically in the UK, at the Didsbury Mosque, where the Manchester bomber came from, he was a Hafiz. He memorized the Quran. He was an incredibly devout, if I can use the word, Muslim, Sharia-adherent Muslim. The mosque, the Didsbury Mosque, his father was a pillar in the Islamic community and was well known. He had leadership positions there. The imam went to Libya and fought in the jihad. Okay, this was known to British officials. Manchester, they brought in jihadis 15 years ago, who then, in the last, since 9/11, had major protests in Manchester, covering their faces, calling for jihad against Islam. And instead of arresting them or shooting them or deporting them, they left them. And they're getting what they get. We have the same issue here. They're very clear about what they want. But because they wear suits and talk nice, we take them at face value. And we allow hard-left Marxists to drive the agenda. We have cowards leading the Republican Party, with the exception of the president and some of the people around him. But we have leaders in both political parties in this country that are cowards, that have shown no intention of defending the republic. And citizens in the UK, short of arming themselves somehow and taking over and throwing their leaders into the streets, I don't see how they survive, because they are allowing insane people to run a country and allow the enemy to kill them over and over. You had police running away from the scene, running away. Those are called cowards. It's so enraging to watch, because it's sad. But we have to stop just coddling these people and making excuses. I mean, the fact that Theresa May is still in power today is amazing. So this is going to happen here, but it's already happened here. Muslims have thawed people's heads off in the United States. That's happened at least half a dozen or a dozen times here. You know, they've used vehicles to plow people over in places like North Carolina and Fremont, California, and Las Vegas, Nevada. This stuff's already going on.
John, this is so sobering, your response to this, and to see what is happening. Could you share with our listeners some evidences that you know, the Islamic jihadist activities, that they're really strategizing this? This isn't just, you know, a lone wolf here or there popping up that somehow got radicalized because of us, you know, blaming the victim as the press does. But this has actually been planned and plotted out, and it's already underway in the U.S. And even though the president said that we must prevent it from coming to our shores, could you maybe share some evidence that shows that it's growing like a cancer, really metastasizing into even rural America as well as our cities?
Absolutely. I mean, we just put out an article today about Islam's conquest of America, one town at a time. And just since I published the article this morning at 6 a.m. Eastern time, I've gotten a number of emails from people saying, hey, what about my town? Because they're here doing the same thing in my town. We just profiled four towns, Hamtramck, Michigan, Minneapolis, Patterson, New Jersey, and Falls Church, Virginia, just to show some quick examples. But let me back up and very quickly share this. First of all, what you're seeing, the way they take over an area, they use Muhammad as the model because he's the perfect example. And so, by the way, why is rape lawful? Why is marrying a 7-year-old child lawful? Why is torture lawful in Islam? Well, because Muhammad did all those things. And so we first need to begin with standing in reality when we discuss this. But when we talk about their penetration into the West and into our communities, we have numerous documents. In 1981, the International Muslim Brotherhood wrote their 12-point strategic plan, which some people have called the Project, and the media actually called it that. And that was uncovered after 9/11. In a chalet in Switzerland, in the home of a senior Muslim Brotherhood leader in the world, Yusuf Nada. And that laid out their 12-point global plan. Then part of that plan was establishing Hamas for the Palestinian cause. And we see that in the 80s, they do that. And in the 80s, here in North America, in the United States, they actually built their infrastructure to new levels. In the early 80s, they created the Islamic Society of North America, and they started building organizations after Hamas, while Hamas was being established as a part of their global plan. Then in the early 1990s, 1991 to be specific, the proposal for their strategic plan was given to the leadership of the Muslim Brotherhood, and within a year, they published their implementation manual to implement their strategic plan right here. And they say, these are the things we need to do. These are the organizations we need to create. And then they do it. And so from 1992 approximately to today, they've created between 80 and 120 nonprofit organizations. They've gone from having less than 1,000, somewhere around 800, 900 mosques, to having over 3,000 mosques in the United States. And we know that the vast majority of them are part of this Muslim Brotherhood movement. And even the ones that are not, which there are only a few, there are some that are Shia mosques that are controlled and supported by Iran, which is also our enemy.
So, John, let me jump in here real quick, John, because I got to wrap up on something with you. You said, when I asked you earlier, you said on a level of 1 to 10, 10 being the greatest, you would say that we are probably at an 8 when it comes to an actual physical attack. But you said that the reality, in effect, for the reality of purposeful preparation for such an attack, if I could rephrase it that way, was at a 10. There are some people who are saying that, well, you know what, we have these Islamic communities down in Virginia and up in Michigan and Minneapolis, and nothing's really happened so far, so therefore, you're crying wolf. Are you crying wolf, John?
I think what you need to look at is, what are the facts? What is their intention? They're very clear. Their intention is to establish an Islamic state under Sharia using all means possible. And if our town council members and our local law enforcement and our local school boards and our local fill in the blank, surrenders ground to them and lets them, accommodates them in every way they say, they won't have to pull a trigger. They won't have to do the things they're doing, but they're going to keep doing, because the one supports the other. You see, when you have somebody blow up a bomb in New York like we had, or, the bombing in Boston, they use that to say, see, look, if you work with us, we can help protect you from that. But they're the same people. Mm. They're coming out of the same community. That's what's going on. That's how they intend to win the war.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing it. The preparation is well underway. It's a 10. John Gwandal, understanding the threat. Again, where should people go to find out more about what they can do in preparation for this? Give us a website, please.
UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Join our newsletter, UTT_USA on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Find us. Join us.
John Gwandal, thanks for being with us today from UnderstandingTheThreat.com. Ladies and gentlemen, right after the break, we're going to come back, and we're going to go directly live to Jerusalem with Bill Koenig. He'll be calling to us and updating us on some significant things, as well as giving us commentary on this division occurring right now between Qatar and Egypt and Saudi Arabia.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us on Stand in the Gap Today, we are glad that you're with us. We've had a power-packed program today. Just talked to John Gwandalo about the impact of what we're seeing in London and the applications to what we ought to be learning here in these United States. But we're going to shift gears now, and we're going to go immediately to Jerusalem. Live from Jerusalem, White House correspondent Bill Koenig. He is the founder of World Watch Daily. And with that, I welcome to the program Bill Koenig. Thank you for being with us.
Sam, great to be with you. I'm here in the old city, so that's a little bit of the noise you're hearing in the background, but it's a pleasure and an honor to be with you all today.
Well, Bill, it is a real pleasure, and it's a wonderful thing that we can actually be talking to you live here, and really in the evening, I guess, in Jerusalem. And I have a lot of things I want to go over with you here today, but let's go here real early if we can, and that is this right now happening. Before we get into some things you as an individual were able to travel with President Trump on the Mideast tour. You've had great access to the president. You were able to be there when he met with the Islamic leaders in Jerusalem, and when you went to the Vatican. I want to ask you right off. You were there, and I want to help put our listeners a little bit of a hold pattern. Before you go there and tell us about that tour, I want you to tell us very briefly why you are there right now in Jerusalem, because you just went back there yesterday, I believe. So why are you there right now in Jerusalem?
We're here to help inaugurate the first annual Jerusalem prayer breakfast. It is June 6th and June 7th. Tomorrow we will be having a breakfast meeting. We'll be having a meeting with the Knesset, some of the Knesset members, and then we'll have our Jerusalem prayer event on Wednesday, the 7th. So, you know, it's a big thing. There's people from 600 countries. Excuse me, 600 people from over 56 countries. And it's just a very special time to be here.
Oh, wow. That is neat. That's very a special thing, as you said. And I would just like to get back then to your traveling with the president and when he was on his Middle East tour. You know, looking back at that tour, what all happened, which has been historic in many ways, if there was an overarching theme or something to take away from it all that you could give to us and our listeners from that trip, what would you maybe point to or look back on from that trip?
Well, I think what most importantly is the fact that President Trump went and spoke to the leaders of 50 Muslim countries. I mean, we've never had a president do that. It's unprecedented. And the fact that he said, you know, right here in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, speaking boldly about the threat of terrorism. And, unfortunately, some of those nations that he spoke to have been sponsored from terror. So I think that was very significant. Also the fact that he is doing what he can right now to isolate Iran. And the GCC countries, which are the seven Sunni countries that border the Persian Gulf, every one of them are petrified by Iran's nuclear plants, missile plants, and he said, we're with you. And they needed that, because after Obama just basically let him go down the river and at the same time cut a really bad deal with Iran.
Well, that's excellent, Bill. And ladies and gentlemen, if you hear a little bit of crackling in the background, that's because Bill Koenig is calling in live. This is a live call from Jerusalem, the old section of Jerusalem. So you hear a little bit of wind in the background, and that explains that. Bill, you talked about the president's discussion to the Islamic leaders, and that was an historic time. I don't think any president's ever done something of that type to that many. However, let me ask you a real pointed question here, because some people are saying that the president did embark on an impossible mission, that there's no way that peace can ensue. Some that I've heard, who even are very conservative Christian people, are saying that the president's actually being used in some respects to advance a one-world religion concept by attempting to bring unity together between Christianity and Judaism and Islam. Yet others are saying that, in fact, no, that the president's speech and his tour there was really a masterfully planned and perhaps being used by God to really shore up Israel, in that he's not kowtowing to a globalist or an Islamic antichrist agenda. So I put a lot in there, but give me your perspective as you are there now. You traveled with the president. You got to see responses on people. You were looking at responses. What do you see God doing by what the president is doing on that tour and other things that are unfolding?
Well, you know, Sam, there are so many different paradigms. There's so many different ways of looking at things. There's so many different narratives. You have the Christian narrative. You have the Jewish narrative. You know, you have the Islamic narrative. Everybody has their own agenda. Everybody has their own plan. Everybody has their own purpose. You know, here we have Israel just wants to live in peace and security. But we know biblically they're going to have a challenge and a trial until they return the Jewish Messiah, Yeshua. And what's interesting about all our presidents, every one of them has had, especially our last 6 to 10, have had a final day prophetic role. President Bush's father was the one that really accelerated the Land for Peace efforts and started, you know, at the time of Nixon and then Reagan and Carter. Carter did a couple peace deals. So, I mean, everything is moving toward that period of time, the final days, and no matter what President Trump does, what's interesting about it, what he's doing, he is isolating Iran. And we know Iran has a very significant final day role in Ezekiel 38 and 39 and Jeremiah 49, 35 through 39. So to isolate Iran, who's been able to get away with whatever they want to do, is very significant. And it also depends on what we do, the United States and allies in this region, do with Iran, could accelerate final day events even further to the fulfillment of Ezekiel 38 and 39 and Jeremiah 49. Not to forget Isaiah 17:1, it talks about the day that Damascus will no longer exist as a city. So that's what I look at, Sam. I think that we have such, you know, President Trump's role, being the type of person he is, you know, business guys don't put all the cards, to use the card term, they don't put all their cards on the table. And what we have in Washington are professional politicians and professional media people that are trying to frame everything based on old thinking, old ways of doing business. And that's why they don't completely understand it. And successful business people are very strategic. They have the end in sight. They're very pragmatic, and they also can see the problems for what they are. President Trump and his incredibly successful and very tuned-in defense team understand that the number one threat in the Middle East is Iran. So they must be dealt with. Secondly, the number one threat in Southeast Asia is North Korea, and they must be stopped. They have radical people running that country. So he has basically been given the opportunity to confront these enemies that are not only an enemy to the United States, but to our allies in the Middle East and also Southeast Asia. So that's when I look at President Trump's that role. And I might throw this out. Michael Oren this week, former U.S. ambassador, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, said Obama, when he was working with us, we were always part of the problem. With Trump, we have love, love, love. I mean, we sincerely have a president that loves the state of Israel, has a great relationship with the prime minister of Israel, Netanyahu, and is really doing things in the Middle East that will make it better for Israel, that will make the Middle East, in some ways, take its prophetic course. At the same time, not be surprised one day when we wake up and find out that Iran has nuclear weapons and that every single Sunni country that borders the Persian Gulf and the world economies are at risk because of that situation with Iran.
Bill, this is some really neat perspective that you're adding to this, and you have been up close with both President Trump as well as President Obama. I would like to ask you, I know you've written about President Obama's legacy, and you said of him that no U.S. president or major world leader has done more to promote Islam than Barack Hussein Obama, and you've talked about the horrible deal just now you were talking about that he cut with Iran. Could you maybe contrast what President Trump is doing? I know there's not a lot of time, but just some of the contrast that Trump has brought to the previous administration of Obama.
Well, I think the key here is Trump has said that the Iran deal is a bad deal. Tillerson has said the same thing. But they're going to fulfill the agreement, but keep a real keen eye on what Iran does. They're going to be very, very watchful. And I think the key here is, I'll give this after the break.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. Sam Rohr and Isaac Crockett, special guest, White House correspondent Bill Koenig, founder of World Watch Daily. He is on the phone with us right now, live from Old Jerusalem. Some of the noise you're hearing in the background, that's expected. Stay with us. We're going to come back. We're going to conclude with him, and we're going to find out a little bit more about that answer there and what's happening in this division that's occurring right now between Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar right after the president's visit there. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' Editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, as we go back now to our special guest, Bill Koenig, White House correspondent, calling to us live from Jerusalem. Bill, just before we went into the break, Isaac asked you a question. Quickly compare the policies of Barack Obama to that of Donald Trump. Can you do that very briefly?
Absolutely. So I think what's important right now is what President Trump and Secretary of State Tillerson said, is we are looking beyond the nuke deal for full accountability of everything that Iran is doing within the Middle East and even beyond that. But he said the nuke deal is part of it, but they are also doing other things. They continue to be a state sponsor of terror. They're developing short-range missile capability. They are doing things that are nefarious, and we're going to hold them holistically accountable. That's a significant difference from a president that was desperate for a legacy and cut a bad deal with Iran.
All right, well, very good. Now, let me just go right into the next question, because it's developing as we're speaking. I want your input on this. You talked about the president meeting with Islamic leaders. That southern coalition was a part of the goal of this whole thing, of the Sunni southern world of Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Jordan, Israel and the United States, juxtapositioned against Turkey and Russia and Syria and Iran. But today, now we're finding that there is a break developed between Egypt and Saudi Arabia condemning Qatar as sponsoring terrorism. Qatar has cut off airline traffic and so forth to Saudi Arabia. I am wondering what you think about that, because, lo and behold, it says that Iran is actually saying, see, aha, ha-ha, this is President Trump in his effort to try and come in and split the Islamic world. Have any comment on this whole thing as it develops?
Well, it's very, very clever. Iran are very smart people. They're very strategic, and they're very patient. So this is typical spin on what's happening right now. And those Sunni countries that border the Persian Gulf are fed up with Qatar being a sponsor of the Muslim Brotherhood, that are sponsoring Islamic terrorism. I mean, Saudi's not completely clean, but I think King Salman and President Trump have been able to connect eye to eye, and he appreciates the commitment the United States has made to Saudi Arabia, who believes they're the second target after Israel of a Iranian nuke. So he's looking at the holistic approach here as well of the entire Middle East. We have a president that's with us. We have a president that will stand with us. We have a U.S. defense team that we have a great relationship on, and we're going to isolate Qatar for what they do, their cozy little relationship from time to time with Iran, and they're going to be isolated. And this is what the Sunni countries are telling Qatar: you pick the side you want to be on. You better be with us. But if you don't, we're going to cut ties, and that's going to go both ways. But Qatar has a lot more to lose than those Sunni countries.
Bill, you've talked about holistic accountability in a holistic context of all that's really going on in the world, especially the Middle East. And is Iran right when they say that President Trump is dividing the Islamic world against itself, or is there more to it? Perhaps was this really a division that, if we looked holistically at the context of it, there was already a division going on between Iran and Russia, with the Shiites, and then the rest of the Sunni world that was maybe already scared of them, and under Barack Obama, they had no one to help them, but now under President Trump, they're taking a different stand against the Shiites?
Those comments are all typical cleverness of Iran. These are very, very smart people, very clever. You can get a PhD in negotiations there. They're masters of spin. What has happened here is 80% of the world's Muslims are Sunni. So that's over a billion world Muslims are Sunni. They're headquarters is really Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is petrified of a nuclear Iran. This division between Shiite and Sunni Islam is so deep that there's probably never any kind of reconciliation, especially when you're dealing with people that are so smart, so strategic, and so clever as the Iranians. And the Saudis have their greatest fear in the world is Iran, even greater is a nuclear Iran, and the Saudis are looking to the United States to help them and confront the number one problem. Everyone in President Trump's defense team, Dunford, Mattis, McMaster, and our believing Christian friend Mike Pompeo's head of CIA, who said no to the Iranian nuke deal, maybe as strong as any member of Congress, they understand the number one threat to the Middle East is Iran, as well as the world. And so it's like you pick your side who you want to be on, because we're well aware of the problem. We're going to do something about it.
Well, Bill, this is most interesting because I want you to pray before we leave. So I'll interrupt you at which point I need to have you pray, because we want to have you pray from Jerusalem. I think it'll be very interesting and great to do on our program. However, this is my question. Isn't it a little hypocritical in some respects for the Saudis, more Saudi than Egypt, but the Saudis to say, Qatar, you've been financing terrorism, when in the fact, in real life, it's the Saudis that have been funding all of the mosques, most of them anyways, in the United States and in Europe. And Al-Qaeda came out of there, and Wahhabism is right there in Saudi Arabia. How do you explain that oddity, perhaps? Because there's something that's not quite right here.
Well, it's so typical, Sam, of the Middle East. It's always selecting the lesser of two evils if you want to have an influence. Everything you said is absolutely accurate. So the main thing is these are chess players in the Trump team. So let's begin our focus on Iran. Let's develop a relationship with these Saudi and Sunni countries. The president has been sincere and spoke with them there in Riyadh about the main problem of radical Islam or radical terrorism. And I think this will come next. I think you'll see members of Congress, senators and congressmen start bringing up exactly what you said. And they better be very repentant if they want to continue this path. But again, Sam, their future and Sunni Islam's future has to do with dealing with Iran as soon as possible, because it's not going to get better. And this $150 billion that was given to the Iranians is going to make them, has made them more influential with their proxy terror groups than ever before.
Well, Bill, great answer. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it. As we look at the Middle East, we need to pray for what's going on. We need to pray for our president. It's not a quick answer here. This is a chess game. Overall, God is working, ladies and gentlemen, and advancing his time frame and his schedule. All of this is happening at the same time, which makes it so very exciting. And Bill, we are excited that you are calling right now from Jerusalem. I'd like for you to close our program in prayer right now from Jerusalem, the focus of the world right now. Lift us up and take us to the Lord in prayer, if you could.
Thank you, Sam. And I'll make this one note again. I'm with people here in Israel, Jewish believers, and Christians from around the world, from 56 countries and 600 people that have come here to birth the first annual Jerusalem Prayer Breakfast. And so, Lord, We are privileged and honored to be focused on the city of Jerusalem, your time clock, Lord. You have given us the prayer, pray for the peace of Israel. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Lord, I pray for the peace of Jerusalem because that means our Messiah, Jesus Christ, will return, and we are longing for the day when we will be reunited with our Messiah, Jesus Christ, Yeshua, here in Jerusalem. Amen.
Bill Koenig, thank you for calling in today. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Koenig, Washington White House correspondent, watch.org is where you go. Get his updates. Fantastic. Thank you for being with us today, ladies and gentlemen, and joining Isaac Crockett and myself. Be with us tomorrow, 23 hours from now, as we go into the issue of biometrics and tracking. Boy, oh boy, you don't want to miss this program tomorrow.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.